Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab. Adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning, everyone. On Tuesday's show, Governor Cuomo came on, as some of you heard, to announce that he would likely be going to the White House yesterday to meet with President Trump about the Gateway Tunnel project for trains between New York and New Jersey, which, as you remember, was a done deal with the federal government until Trump came into office and trashed it. The governor said it's not just a local concern if it doesn't get built.
Again, this is a federally owned tunnel. It's not about New York, New Jersey. Yes, it'll hurt New York City, but it's the entire Northeast rail corridor.
And if you remember, the governor told us about watching the two existing tunnels fall apart through a lens.
A few weeks ago, I went into the tunnels and I took a video of the tunnels and I sent it to the president.
So yesterday, the two most powerful men from Queens had lunch. Shrimp and beef, we're told. So where's the beef on Gateway?
He said, I am receptive. I'm looking for a way to move forward. And it was a very positive meeting.
In other words, no deal yet. They're still making the sausage, but that's mixing metaphors. We'll get a report from Washington in a minute. But meanwhile, on at least two major fronts right now, the Trump administration is in a public debate with itself. Climate change, on which they confirm it and deny it, and on the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia's involvement in the murder of Jamal Khashoggi, same thing. The Trump administration both confirms it and denies it. Their CIA issued a report saying Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman ordered the killing, but in a Senate hearing yesterday, Trump's CIA director, Gina Haspel, did not testify. Instead, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo contradicted her finding.
I do believe I've read every piece of intelligence, unless it's come in the last few hours. I think I've read it all. There is no direct reporting connecting the Crown Prince to the order to murder Jamal Khashoggi. And that's all I can say in an unclassified setting.
So we'll talk on today's show about Trump versus Trump administration on Saudi Arabia, Trump versus Trump administration on climate change, and Trump not quite versus Cuomo, strange bedfellows sort of getting along on infrastructure, or is Cuomo being played? With me now, Politico White House correspondent Gabby Orr and WNYC congressional correspondent John O'Connor. Hi, John and Gabby. Thanks for joining us. Welcome to WNYC.
Great to be on.
Hey, Brian.
John, did Cuomo get what he came for?
It's hard to say. He threw out a bunch of ideas yesterday that are fairly new at that press conference, so maybe he sparked the president's imagination and something will stick and it'll be a new way forward on Gateway. Right now, the program is kind of been stuck in the administrative process. You know, it's permits and reviews and things like that. And the Gateway folks are kind of been unsure about where to go, when the administration is going to respond. They feel like the goalposts have been moved at times during this process. And of course, then, the president will pop up every now and then and threaten a veto on the entire spending bill over Gateway funding.
It looks like the president's main concern was that the $13 billion projected price tag could include a lot of bloat. And Cuomo agreed in principle that they would work together to make sure any tunnel project is cost effective. Does that have a tangible way to move forward?
It's not clear, at least right now. That's one of the things we'll have to go follow up on. What the governor laid out yesterday, it's not exactly clear how it would work. There's a lot of rules that are attached to projects like this and the money, and Gateway was set up specifically so that it would be eligible to receive federal funds. So if what the governor is talking about in restructuring the organization here, somehow negates that, that would be a problem, obviously. It's not clear whether or not it would mean taking a step back in the process. You know, the Gateway's applied for environmental impact studies. They've submitted these things already, submitted for permits. So if it means having to redo any of those steps, that costs time, and in infrastructure projects, time is money. So those are a lot of the questions that will have to be answered about what the governor was proposing yesterday, because it wasn't completely clear.
Gabby, let me play another clip of Cuomo, this time from his reelection campaign this year, talking about Donald Trump.
He has to be stopped. I'm in a fight with him. He tweets at me weekly. I welcome it. Know me by my enemies.
I think if Trump tweets at Cuomo weekly, I'd missed a lot of those tweets. But we know what Donald Trump does with people who criticize him like that. He gives them mocking nicknames and says they should be locked up and things like that. So why is Trump playing nice at all with Andrew Cuomo?
You know, I've almost been wondering if this is similar to the Mitt Romney situation, where President Trump brought him in repeatedly for meetings during the presidential transition, promised him an opportunity to become Secretary of State, and then totally went in a different direction, sort of in a way, potentially to embarrass Mitt Romney and to get even after all of the criticism that he had had of the president during the campaign. And there might be a similar game at play here with Cuomo. The New York governor said that he felt like this was a very productive meeting, despite not leaving with any concrete promises. But it could very well be that the president is just bringing him in to talk through this project, see if there's anything that can be done, but also portray himself as being in power, in control in this type of situation, that Mr. Cuomo had to come to the White House, had to essentially beg the president for help with this project, and that President Trump remains in control. And I think that that's something that he sort of thrives on in the office of the presidency.
So, John, per that answer, did Cuomo get played by Trump?
It's hard to say. I mean, I would think if you're in Governor Cuomo's position, it's always good to keep an open channel with the president. And, you know, yesterday's meeting certainly accomplished that. You know, we have seen these meetings in the past that have included both Republicans and Democrats on you know, there's been kind of a recurring regular series of gateway meetings. And we've seen Republicans leave these meetings and say, yeah, the president, you know, this was a love fest, I think is what Peter King called one of these meetings last year. And then, you know, weeks later, the president sours on the project or Secretary of Transportation Secretary Elaine Chao comes to Congress and kind of gives some pointed testimony about what the administration thinks on these projects. So, I don't know necessarily that it's just Cuomo getting played here.
And Gabby, Trump says he's the infrastructure president. Cuomo is definitely the infrastructure governor with his LaGuardia Rail Link, New Tappan Zee Bridge, now prioritizing Gateway over just about every other New York State priority for D.C. Why isn't Trump being more of the infrastructure president he ran on to be? I mean, that's supposed to be part of the pro-worker America First package, right?
It absolutely is. It's something that he promised to tackle on several occasions during his campaign and early on in his presidency. And, you know, we've now heard from the president himself, but also many of his senior advisors, that they do feel like they made a mistake last year in trying to repeal and replace Obamacare before they tackled infrastructure. They felt like they lost the opportunity to work across the aisle to come up with a major infrastructure package, and that the momentum behind that just rapidly dwindled after the healthcare debacle. There's still hope, though, that now that we have, you know, a Democratic House majority coming in, that the president could sort of revive this talk of an infrastructure package, of some bipartisan deal. I think that there's feelings on both sides, among Republicans and Democrats, that this is something that needs to get done and could very well get done in the next Congress.
Gabby, tell me more about something you just said. How might the incoming Democratic House affect infrastructure politics, for better or worse, in terms of getting things going?
Well, they've, you know, long said that they need to be a party that doesn't just stand against Trump, but actually gets things done. And so this is really their opportunity to be doing that over the next 2 years, as they prepare to put a Democrat forward in 2020. They need somebody to be able to say, this is what our party in control of the lower chamber has done to benefit the country. And so there is a great deal of motivation among Democrats to work across the aisle with President Trump. But what isn't clear is the details, the minutiae of this type of deal. The president has always said that he wants sort of a public-private partnership on infrastructure. That has been embraced by some Democrats, but not by all. So there could certainly be obstacles ahead if they do try to pursue this in the coming months.
listeners, we have Gabby Orr, Politico White House correspondent, and we have John O'Connor, WNYC Washington correspondent, and we can take your phone calls for them at 212-433-WNYC. It doesn't all have to be on gateway and infrastructure. We'll go on to some other things, too, on our incoming congressional delegation, on Trump and Saudi Arabia and some other White House things. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. But before we get off this, John, did they also talk about SALT when, you know, when the governor came on the show on Tuesday to announce that he was likely going to the White House on Wednesday? He said he has two main priorities for New York and Washington right now. One is the Gateway Tunnel, and the other is winning the repeal of the state and local income tax tax bill provision. In other words, anybody who lives in New York, anybody who lives anywhere anymore, but it affects a lot of New Yorkers who pays more than $10,000 a year in state and local taxes, will no longer get that portion federally tax deductible. That's going to cost a lot of New Yorkers a lot of money, apparently. So he listed that right up there with Gateway as, you know, the number one, number two priorities he has for Washington coming from New York State. Any indication that he and the president talked about the SALT deduction?
Yeah, there was nothing in the White House's official readout of the meeting that mentioned a conversation about this deduction. I think what we can say with certainty, though, is that the president is aware of the governor's position, and the governor of New Jersey, the governor of Connecticut, the governor of Maryland, all these other states, is aware of their position on this state and local tax deduction. The estimates are it's going to cost $36 billion next year in deductions that folks would have been able to take were it not for this cap. Eventually, that rises to $90 billion a year. And this money was used to pay for some of the other tax cuts in the bill. So this is, you know, this money directly goes over to cutting corporate income taxes or cutting the taxes on these so-called pass-through companies. I know the governor is going to can talk about this issue with the president in these meetings, but it's important to point out that there is right now zero evidence that congressional Republicans have any interest in revisiting the state and local tax deduction, in repealing it or changing it or expanding it in any way, particularly in the Senate, where Senator Mitch McConnell actually added senators in this midterm election. So he's got an even larger majority over there right now. So, you know, these Democratic governors can complain about the policy, but they're not likely to get very far in the next 2 years with it.
So for all you homeowners on Long Island and in Westchester and New Jersey and Connecticut, it's not so bad with the city because property taxes are actually lower in the city, but especially in the suburbs, or if you own a place that's expensive enough in the city and your tax bill is about to go up because you pay so much in property taxes, well, don't hold your breath. Let's take a phone call. Maria in Morningside Heights, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Yes, I'm experiencing deja vu because I called you probably 8 years ago and said the exact same thing. How can something that was already approved be turned down? So it was the ARC tunnel when Chris Christie came into office, and he just rejected it outright. And now this is the same thing. It's already been approved. I don't understand how Trump can even has any leverage over this if it's already been approved. And I just also want to point out that the Koch brothers hate mass transit. And so, of course, he gets lots of money from the Koch brothers. And actually, Cuomo does, too, and if you look that up. And that may be why he's tamped down on the MTA over the previous 8 years. And finally, I want to point out that co-president Tom Cotton probably has to weigh in before Trump decides anything.
Yes, co-president Tom Cotton, who seems to be the co-president of infrastructure and the co-president of building a Mexican border wall. Well, that's a lot of points. John, on her first one, that it's like deja vu all over again. Yeah, there was the ARC tunnel agreement. And then Chris Christie, when he was governor of New Jersey, dumped out of that, saying the price tag for the New Jersey portion was too high. Then they went back and renegotiated with Washington, got the Gateway Tunnel Agreement, where the feds were going to pick up, I think, 50%. So Christie agreed, and Cuomo agreed, and Obama agreed. Then Trump comes in and he says, no, the federal portion is too high. It is deja vu. Is it just negotiation as usual over a price tag and a multi-party agreement, or is it something other than that?
Yeah, that is a big part of it. The specifics here are that the Trump administration came in and said this agreement between the Obama administration and the states and all of the various local agencies, they'd reached kind of a handshake agreement, but the paperwork hadn't actually been completed. And so therefore, in their mind, there was no deal. The deal was not completed. And so that's why they've come in and said, this there is no deal. You know, this project is not on the books for us. The big concern here, there's a couple of different policy concerns that the Trump administration has expressed throughout this process. A big one is the cost. The president has been very concerned about the total cost of this project. It has increased as it's gone through the process, the design and permit process. He's also concerned, his budget director in particular has been concerned about the federal share of the project. That's been a long-term push for Republicans that the federal government should pay for less of these large infrastructure projects and that the states and the local government should pay for more. And then there's some kind of secondary concerns that the president has mentioned at various points that he hasn't followed up on that folks have said have been interesting, such as, maybe opposing this project as a way to go after the prevailing wage laws in New York, which has been what critics of those laws have said it's been a contributing factor to why infrastructure projects in New York in particular have gotten so expensive.
On the caller's comment, Gabby, that the Koch brothers hate mass transit. There are certainly a lot of kind of conservative or libertarian Republicans who don't believe in a lot of mass transit funding. Larry Kudlow, who's the president's chief economics advisor, I've heard him say before he joined the administration that mass transit should be a local concern because people from Arkansas don't have any reason to fund trains for people in New York and New Jersey and things like that. Ronald Reagan once upon a time talked against a lot of mass transit infrastructure, saying it was all coming from people who were anti-car. We played that clip a few months ago, and the car was the symbol of American freedom. We'll talk later in the show about GM downsizing. But do the Koch brothers and others, as far as you know, as a White House correspondent for Politico, lobby against mass transit funding for any ideological or self-interested reason?
Oh, I mean, absolutely. I think the Koch brothers, this has sort of always been an offshoot of their opposition to big government and higher taxes. I mean, they say that this is impacting small cities and small businesses across the country that have to support these light rail projects, these changes to different tunnels, bus routes, Amtrak. All of these projects are being subsidized by, according to the Koch brothers, taxpayers across the country that shouldn't be funding projects in New York and in major urban and metropolitan areas. They were really involved in this this year, leading up to the midterms. They had their organization on the ground in states like Arkansas and Arizona. I think they were in Michigan as well, just talking to voters about the costs of all of these projects, what kind of impact it has on their taxes at their own local and state level, and sort of continuing their existing crusade against the public transit and public infrastructure projects.
Larry in Easton, Pennsylvania. You're on WNYC. Hi, Larry.
Yeah, hi, Brian. Yeah, we just moved here originally from Brooklyn. But Trump's base hates New York and New Jersey. Trump, I imagine, also hates New York and New Jersey because we rejected him and all of his candidates. So whatever he can do to screw New York and New Jersey, his base will applaud. And he's only playing to his base now.
Larry, I'm going to leave it there. Thank you very much. And go on to Mario in Tenafly. Mario, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Yes, hi, Brian. Thank you for taking my call. And I enjoy your show very much. I agree with the former caller. I think that one of the major obstacles is that we, New Jersey and New York, became part of the blue wave in a massive way, and that it's going to play against us. But I think that if we follow the rule that we know works, if we learn from Putin, if we learn from the Filipino president, and if we learn from Kim Jong-un, if we say, we promise to Trump that we will put his name on the tunnel on golden letters on one side and on the other side with flashing lights, he may come along and like that.
Mario, that's brilliant. I thought this was a segment where we weren't going to talk about people like Duterte, but the, you know, there was a Daily News article, John, yesterday. I don't know if that's where Mario got the idea, but that proposed a similar thing. It was kind of tongue in cheek, but it said, hey, if we just promise to call it, instead of the Gateway Tunnel, the Trump Tunnel, then maybe he'll go for it. Is it possible that anything like that could be taken seriously?
I couldn't say right now for certain, but we do know that there is a vanity aspect to this. If just from some of the reporting from like the there's a Washington Post story that had talked about the president, when he was talking about infrastructure, wanted to deal with infrastructure dealing with airports because he thought airports were kind of more glamorous and the trains were less glamorous. So, you know, who knows? I mean, maybe if you call it an airport and build the tunnel, he'll be okay with that.
And as we talk to WNYC Washington correspondent John O'Connor and Gabby Orr, White House correspondent for Politico, changing the subject, let's turn to Trump administration versus itself on Saudi Arabia. Here is National Security Advisor John Bolton telling reporters why he refused to even listen to the audio tape the CIA got of Jamal Khashoggi being killed.
Well, you want me to listen to it? What am I going to learn from? I mean, if they were speaking Korean, I wouldn't learn any more from it either.
Interpreter would be able to tell you what's
going on. Then I can read a transcript, too.
So you don't think it's important to hear that as a national security advisor?
I'm just trying to make the point that everybody who says, why don't you listen to the tape, unless you speak Arabic, what are you going to get from it?
And yesterday, a Senate hearing on the issue was notable for the conspicuous absence of CIA Director Gina Haspel. Senator Lindsey Graham, often a Trump ally these days, was not having it.
I am not going to be denied the ability to be briefed by the CIA that we have oversight of about whether or not their assessment supports my belief that this could not have happened without MBS knowing.
So, Gabby, is the Trump administration divided on the Saudis and Khashoggi?
Well, I think there's certainly been a disconnect between what President Trump has said on this entire matter and what his administration has said. You know, he's often deflected and said that there's no definitive evidence, particularly from the intelligence community, directly tying Khashoggi's death to the Saudi crown prince. While others in his own administration have suggested that there is, if not definitive evidence, certainly evidence that points to that connection. And President Trump has yet seemed willing to embrace that. We're also hearing that he played some role in preventing Gina Haspel, the CIA director, from briefing the entire Senate conference earlier this week on the matter involving Khashoggi. Secretary Pompeo was there, as was Defense Secretary Jim Mattis. But when senators asked why the chief intelligence officer, Gina Haspel, wasn't present, Pompeo and Mattis both seemed to suggest that that was a White House decision. Mm. And the White House has not yet provided a clear answer on why they would have not wanted Haspel there.
But would she have given contradictory testimony to the clip we just played from Pompeo, where he said there is no direct evidence that the Crown Prince was involved? The CIA report seems to say he ordered it.
I can't say whether or not she would have contradicted the Secretaries of State and Defense, but what is clear is that the CIA intelligence on this would have certainly rounded out what we already know. And I think that she brings a perspective that neither Pompeo or Mattis would have. And she brings the background knowledge and the full exposure to this investigation. And so that's one of the reasons why a lot of these senators wanted to hear from her specifically. It's another reason why they're kind of baffled as to why she wasn't included. And that's why you have somebody like Graham, notably a huge ally to this administration and a good friend of President Trump, saying that he wants Haspel to be there to speak with senators this week. Otherwise, there will be consequences.
And Gina Haspel, of course, a Trump appointee. And on this, the Senate passed something yesterday that could potentially derail the U.S. role in the, maybe we should call it a Saudi Arabia versus Iran proxy war in Yemen, but which has had a horrible humanitarian impact. One stat I heard this morning was that 85,000 children have died, mostly as a result of starvation caused by this war. I think most Americans have no idea that we are currently at war in Yemen, even with no U.S. troops, providing logistical and other support to the Saudis. Is this in your bucket enough, Gabby, to say how we are at war with the Saudis in Yemen?
That's a tough one. I am not as in touch with what's going on over in Yemen as I would like to be. Obviously, the White House beat demands my attention elsewhere most
yes.
days.
But how about that Senate bill? They took a 2-to-1 vote for the moment against continuing funding for the support for the Saudis yesterday. That's pretty shocking.
Yeah, I think the final tally was 63-37, which is, you know, it's rare that we've seen any measure pass in the Senate over the last 2 years under this administration with that type of bipartisan support. And so this was a pretty substantial rebuke to President Trump's approach to the involvement in Yemen. And I think it was something that's going to create a challenge for his administration going forward as they decide what their policy is going to be on Saudi Arabia.
And John, does our congressional delegation, which you cover in Washington, have any role to play in this? We certainly have people like Menendez in New Jersey and Chris Murphy in Connecticut who are very keen on foreign affairs.
Yeah, Chris Murphy's been real vocal on this, you know, they've been very concerned about Middle Eastern policy, about the Trump administration's Middle Eastern policy, and particularly since this Khashoggi story has come out, and all of these guys have been, you know, working behind the scenes on trying to rally support to oppose arms sales, for instance, to the Saudis, so that the next announced arms sale that comes through, Chris Murphy has said he has said in the past that he wants to try and block it. So the local guides are definitely playing a role in the Senate. I mean, you know, one senator has so much influence within what happens in the Senate that you know, when they really get interested in an issue like this, it can balloon like we saw yesterday.
And the president is going to the G20 summit in Argentina, and there's all this buzz about whether he's going to meet with MBS and whether he's going to meet with Putin. But Gabby, your article is about where Mike Pence is going this weekend, and that's to Mexico to meet with the new incoming president there about a wall?
That's correct. He'll be down there for the inauguration of the incoming president this Saturday. He was always scheduled to attend that, but his office did recently add a meeting a lunch meeting with incoming President Obrador to discuss the crisis at the border, the situation with the caravan, and the Trump administration's attempt to keep all asylum seekers in Mexico until their claims can be heard. So it's not clear yet what the incoming Mexican government plans to do on this situation. They had previously said that they were on board with that remain in Mexico policy, but then quickly reversed and said that no deal had been reached. So it seems like Pence is sort of being sent down there not only to attend this inauguration and lead the delegation to it, but also to try and iron out the details of an agreement between both countries.
John, one thing about our local delegation in the news this week, looks like Brooklyn Congressman Hakeem Jeffries just became more powerful, right?
Yeah, his colleagues elected him narrowly. He won by a 10-vote margin to become the fifth-ranking Democrat, to become the House Democratic Caucus chairman. It's an influential position within the Democratic Caucus. He kind of shepherds his members, coordinates, organizes them, makes sure they're all staying on message on issues and votes. But it's also a great springboard to bigger and better things. And instantly he got that question yesterday. Are you interested in becoming speaker one day? He brushed it aside and said, no, I'm interested in the job I have now. But it will, as caucus chairman, it'll allow him to, you know, take the temperature of his caucus on a regular basis, to get to know members, build relationships, raise money, which is always important if you want to become a speaker. So, yeah, this is definitely a springboard to a potential bigger role.
And we've been talking about Trump versus Andrew Cuomo, Trump with Andrew Cuomo, but not all politics have to do with powerful guys from Queens. There's also the Senate Minority Leader, a powerful guy from Brooklyn, Chuck Schumer. Reports are he's open to Mexican border wall funding as part of some kind of deal, and he's getting pushback from his left. What's Schumer thinking?
Well, they had, you know, when circumstances were different prior to the midterms and Democrats were not poised to take control of the House, you know, his thinking on this was, you know, agree to $1.3 billion, get the issue off the table, you know, deal with some border security and make this less of an issue for vulnerable Democrats in red states. Since the midterm, that math has changed a little bit. You know, he had a few members who lost re-election. And so the big question that he's getting from the left this week has been, you know, the starting negotiation should be zero. You know, the previous deal that you guys had worked out should be null and void. You should start over on this, and the Democrats really shouldn't assent to any money being in the budget. That's what we're hearing from folks in the House. You know, it'll remain to be seen what the final spending bill negotiations work out, and when they do it, whether or not they get something done this month or push it down the road, it remains to be seen.
Gabby, the president doesn't need Chuck Schumer or any Democrats to get this budget bill through in the coming days because the Congress is still all Republican majority until the end of the year. So why is this even a conversation? Do you know?
Well, correct me if I'm wrong, but I do believe he needs 60 votes in the Senate
to pass
spending legislation like this.
And they haven't done away with that filibuster yet. only for judges.
Haven't.
Go ahead.
Yeah. So he does have the support in the House. Paul Ryan said that yesterday, but it does sort of hinge on whether or not they can get any Democrats on board in the Senate. And I think if the legislation that comes there from the House includes this $5 billion for the border wall that President Trump has requested, it's going to be very difficult to get any Democratic senator on board.
So do you see any likelihood that the government is going to shut down, as some people speculate, over the issue of a border wall in the next few days?
The president has certainly said that he has no problem if we head into a government shutdown over the border wall funding. He has made it clear, and so have several Republicans who were more on the more conservative Republicans, have said that they feel like they owe him his request at this point. He helped carry in a number of Republicans in the midterm elections. He helped stave off a significant blue wave, although obviously there was a lot of damage done to the House Republican majority. And they feel like they owe it to him to get this through. But of course, again, in the Senate, it's going to be tough to pass. One thing that they are talking about is sort of spreading this $5 billion figure out over 2 to 3 years, and that might in some way carry more appeal to among the crowd of Democratic senators than would just a full $5 billion funding for this fiscal year.
Well, I guess the upshot of this segment is there's a piece of infrastructure that the president is committed to, the Mexico border wall. There's a piece of infrastructure that the president is not so committed to, the Gateway Tunnel between New York and New Jersey. And so as for Governor Cuomo,
I'm going to keep hammering away, pardon the pun.
And that's where we leave it, with Gabby Orr, White House correspondent for Politico, and WNYC's Washington correspondent, John O'Connor. Thank you both so much.
Thank you.